Four seasons in one day, lying in the depths of your imagination. Worlds above and worlds below. The sun shines on the black clouds hanging over the domain. Even when you're feeling warm, the temperature could drop away.
Four seasons in one day, a crowded house. Look, I think we can take two things from having heard that. A, that we are about to talk about a sense of place. That's what we do when we play music here on Blueprint. And from that song, I am narrowing the possibilities for where that place may be, but I'm not going to speculate. I will introduce our guest and we will see if they can confirm my suspicions. Navo Zissin is a queer, non-binary Jewish writer, performer, activist, public speaker, very busy person. They've also released just recently a new book. It's called The Pronoun Lowdown. Navo, welcome.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
All right, let's confirm my suspicions. Four seasons in one day. Where is that taking us?
Absolutely, it's Melbourne.
Of course.
Nowhere else.
Tell us about that song and its place in your life.
Yeah, well, it was really interesting when I was asked to choose a song of a sense of place, and it actually threw me a little bit because I feel like music is so transcendent of space and place more often than not. But I think that song for me was definitely put in there for my mother's sake as well, as a big Crowded House fan. And, you know, I was kind of frantically looking for songs that would represent the place that I live on, Wurundjeri country. And I guess all of the songs I was finding were not songs I already knew, so it felt kind of ingenuine to choose them. And so choosing this song was something I grew up with Crowded House. I was always listening to them as a kid with my mom in particular. So it just kind of felt right because I guess so much of my relationship with the place that I live and with its erratic weather changes are also very connected to my relationship with my mum and my family.
Well, and what about the Melbourne thing? I mean, your relationship to Melbourne growing up?
I am so grateful to live where I do. I mean, not only is this beautiful country, beautiful land, I've always grown up in Wurundjeri and Bunurong countries and, you know, pay my respects to elders past, present and emerging, and really recognize the gift that is being on such an ancient and sacred country that is not my own. And, you know, I think as I get older as well, really connecting into what that means and what my sense of place means ancestrally and historically. And, you know, there's so many different aspects to how we exist and live in space. But I think Melbourne has been a very, very kind home to me over my life. I am acutely aware of how many, especially LGBTIQA plus young people, live in regional and rural areas that present different kinds of challenges for them, of which I haven't experienced, and feel really lucky to live in such a cultural hub of the world where there is so much safety and opportunity and vitality with regard to gender diversity and just diversity in general, and really just embracing the creativity that exists within our world. And I've always felt that here, and haven't really had the desire to explore other options because of how abundant things feel here.
Which is a wonderful thing to feel about a place in which one lives. That's a tremendous, I was going to say comfort, but it's not quite the right word. I mean, it's to be surrounded by all those possibilities and to find them satisfyingly in a place is a wonderful thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that Melbourne offers the opportunity for experiencing FOMO every minute of every day because there's so much going on. But in a sense, I feel really grateful that I experience FOMO of my own city. You know, I think there are a lot of people who live in other places who are experiencing like a kind of international FOMO of like, where could I be right now in the world that would be fulfilling to me? And I feel really lucky to not really feel that way.
Are there places in your thinking where internal conversations about place and gender coincide?
Yeah, absolutely. I think they are inextricably linked to one another. And, you know, my mind goes to the Tiwi Islands in particular and thinking of the Sister Girls communities that live there. You know, within Aboriginal cultures in this country, there are many different understandings of gender that have existed for 80,000 plus years. So brother boys and sister girls are one of those understandings. And I think that, you know, I really believe that the liberation of any of us should be the liberation of all of us, and that these issues are not siloed and disconnected from one another, but are incredibly linked. I mean, the ways that we understand gender nowadays in this place are deeply influenced by the powers of colonization and by the processes that have occurred in this country of really editing and violently removing the diversity of gender that has existed. So I think, you know, First Nations justice is one of those things that when we prioritize that above everything, really, all the rest follows. You know, our understandings of climate change, our understandings of gender, our understandings of equity, like there are so many things that we stand to gain and can be led by First Nations activists.
I want to know, because we should take this conversation to pronouns. Navo, your own journey in life through pronouns, can you tell us, what did you begin with?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think pronouns are such an interesting one because I think for the most part, they're not very personal. You know, I think...
I think that's the point, isn't it, of pronouns, is to sort right. of objectify somewhat.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, we are subjectifying people, but not in a kind of three-dimensional sense. I remember as a child, my grandmother used to say to me, you know, don't say she, say her name. Like, it's not respectful actually yes. to she somebody. You should be speaking to them by name. And I find that so interesting because this maybe old school grandmother rhetoric now links really well into my rather radical queer politic.
Good Lord, like, it's just politeness.
Yeah, well, I mean, isn't that just mind-boggling that actually when we're just polite and respect people that there are real common threads here in our sort of intergenerational discourse? Yeah, I think it's very interesting. So, yeah, pronouns, I mean, do I love they, them pronouns? Do I feel really deeply attached to them? Not really. I don't care for them that much, but... Mm. I don't feel as much of a visceral aversion to them as I do the other ones. So I was assigned female at birth, and so with that assignation came she, her pronouns. Those were words that were used for me for a very long time. And, you know, in the pronoun lowdown, I describe that it's a little bit like wearing a tank top in winter. It was a, you know, a piece of clothing that someone gave me. I put it on. I got lots of compliments around it, but no one really paid attention to the fact that I was freezing cold. And it was really inappropriate for the environment in which I was in. And that when I discovered he pronouns, that for me, that felt like a cashmere sweater, that it was warm and comfortable and fashionable and felt good on me. But what I noticed was that it was immovable. Mm. It was still a kind of static state, which was something I didn't feel. It felt itchy, you know, it felt constricting. And so I describe they, them pronouns, for me at least, as something that is a stretchy fabric that camouflages to the seasons and changes colour and is just endlessly more creative and explorative for me. Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of what my journey has been like a little bit, is just sort of finding myself within these boxes, which is a very difficult thing to do. You know, I think we spend a lot of our lives trying to understand who we are and what our place is in this world and what our meaning is. Mm. And when there are all of these expectations and projections onto us from everybody else, we mirror them and we become them and we actually sandpaper down parts of ourselves in order to fit into them. And it's a deeply profound and challenging journey to find and create what we are outside of those understandings. And I really believe that being trans is just such an audacity to imagine yourself differently, you know, like the audacity to reimagine yourself and to love yourself so deeply that you want to see the fullest version of who you are. And I am so grateful that I had that audacity.
It's a radical act, and I think it's radicalness is demonstrated by the conversation held in some quarters around this topic of pronouns, where it's met with significant resistance and people decry, you know, the clunkiness, I guess, of they, them in language in which they are used to a certain smooth ease of he, she, his, him. And yet, you know, it's that background quest to put everything into a category, to create Absolutely. Social comfort in delineation. And we go back to that point of, you know, the anxiety of infinite possibility that you remove those boxes and suddenly, how do we categorize the world? I'm suddenly lost and floundering. Give me back my pronouns, please.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you've spoken to that so beautifully. I couldn't agree with you more. And I think, you know, I have sort of two sets of arguments on that topic. And I think one is that they, them pronouns are not as chunky and clunky as we may think they are. We actually use them all the time in singular form without realizing. Like, for example, if I was to say, oh no, someone left their phone, I wonder if they'll be back to get it. That's a perfectly regular sentence that people use constantly when they're not sure of the identity or the gender of the person they're referring to. I wouldn't say, oh no, someone left he or she sorry, he's on her phone. I wonder if he or she will be back to get it. You know, like, that sounds pretty clunky to me.
Yes.
So I would personally argue that it's actually a lot easier than we think it is. And the more we practice something, the easier it becomes. The more we resist something, the less our brain is kind of willing to adapt to it. So we're making it chunkier and clunkier ourselves. It's not actually the people who use those pronouns that are doing that. It's our resistance to it in the first place. And then my other argument would be, if it is difficult, what's wrong with difficult? What's wrong with challenging? Why do we want everything always to be so easy? And in a society where I would argue that what is easy is what is passive and what is mindless, you know, we do so many things in our lives that we are not mindful to, that we are quite disembodied from our own needs, from our own internal processings and feelings. And that's why there's been such a kind of upstroke in mindfulness and yoga and meditation and all of that, to try and reclaim our own experiences in the world and our own vitality and awakeness to the world. And I think that if they, them pronouns offers you a moment of pause in a very busy day, maybe that's a gift.
Yes, I've just stopped to think and suddenly I'm thinking.
Yeah, suddenly I'm thinking. Here I am in this moment, present and awake and here and meeting you and having a real interaction that isn't online and that, you know, like, why is that a bad thing?
It's an entirely wonderful thing, Nivo, and thank you so much for, well, explaining it, but also setting it down in words and living that radicality. Appreciate your time with it today. Nivo Zizan, a queer non-binary Jewish writer, performer, activist, public speaker. They have a new book out and about. It is called The Pronoun Lowdown. And this is Blueprint, Radio National.